Welcome back to On the Mic with Mike Peters. My guest this week is the very funny comedian from New York City, Caitlin Palufo. She is hilarious. She's got two great podcasts. One's called Beast. She does that with Leif and Oxen. And the other one is Good Time Gal, which she started during the pandemic. It's full of debaucherous tales, so what's not to love? Caitlin is one of the funniest stand-ups around. She made her TV debut on Colbert last year. And go to YouTube. Watch that clip. It's one of the funniest late-night sets I've ever seen. She's also dating Stephen Rogers. So for a treat, go back and listen to episode 11. It'll make for a nice companion piece. I also forgot to ask her what her worst show was, but I guarantee you it's the same one that Stephen Rogers was talking about in Norwich. So really, go back and listen to that episode, and you know what? They're all pretty good, so you can listen to all of them. Those two guys just got a cat, Bowie. So you know me, we talked about that cat for about, I think, 47 minutes. So I apologize, but we got to talk about the cat. That's the rule. I'm sorry. If I could change it, I wouldn't. So there. You guys are really going to love Caitlin. She's one of the funniest people around. Thank you guys so much. Please like, share, tell a friend about the podcast. I will talk to you guys next week. Take care. I'm peeling back my sunburned skin. I'll wait outside your bedroom. I hope they let me in.
It was magical. It was like, oh, comedy's coming back. And then, of course, it's not yet. But, oh, the hope was there.
I know. It's like just a tease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You ready to go?
I sure am.
Yeah, cool. We're all set. We're just going to keep going. I'll chop off the beginning of this.
Okay. But I thought it was gold. Come on.
No, it's garbage. Everything I say is garbage. So it's better off this way. I appreciate you doing this.
Thank you for having me. I'm so sorry about the previous mix-up.
Well, okay. So I didn't mind so much that, you know, you screwed up the date when we were supposed mm-hmm. to record. It was getting bumped for Brian Regan that really hurt me. like if you're going to bump me, get a good comedian at least, you know?
Yeah.
Someone who's done something.
Yeah. You know what? I'm so sorry. I didn't mean any harm by it.
It's quite okay. Yeah. No, you told me you were going to be on the road. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I knew where Steve Rogers was going to be. Not that you needed to know his last name. But I was like, oh, I wonder if that's going to happen. And then I saw the pictures. I'm like, fair enough.
Yeah.
I can be bumped for him. I guess it's okay.
Thank you so much for understanding. I was going to be there anyway, but just because I love Bloomington. The Comedy Attic is one of my favorite clubs in the country. And so I was going to go just to be like, hey, you know, and then they asked me if I wanted to host. And I was like, well, now I got to find 12 minutes of clean material. And it took a minute, but I found it. It does exist.
I've seen you twice, I think. I don't know if you remember meeting me, but we were at O'Day's for an open mic at Syracuse.
Yes.
There you go. There you go.
Yes, I remember now. Okay. I was filthy. Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then I saw you at, it wasn't the Boho then, but it was the Binghamton Comedy Crawl a couple mm-hmm. years ago.
Yeah.
And you headlined one of the shows. And yeah, clean comedy doesn't seem like it's your thing.
It doesn't come naturally, no.
Okay.
But it is, I was actually surprised that how much I had. And a lot of it was just doing jokes and then just changing the ending, you know, to something that was cleaner, you know, instead of calling me a dick slayer, I call myself a beast or something, you know,
right, it's
just
right,
something,
right.
A little switch, you know, and Steve was like, yeah, you just got to do that. And so, but basically I was very lucky to have Steve, not only because he got me the gig, but also because he just picked out my jokes. And he was like,
nice.
You can do this, you can do this, you can do this. He even went through my tweets and was like, you can do those. And I was like, oh, I didn't know tweets could be jokes. Here we go.
Did you pick out his clothes and he picked out your jokes?
Yeah, pretty much. I think it's a fair
trade.
Nice.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, how'd the show go?
The shows were so fun. They were so much fun. The crowds were great. He is so funny and so nice. And so it was just a really a blast of a weekend.
Now, is that something you think is going to happen occasionally or?
Yeah, well, we just got word that we got asked to do it again.
Nice.
In a week and a half. Yeah, we're going to Alabama, Kentucky, and Ohio. So, and I'm hosting. So I guess I didn't blow it. but don't worry, I'll find a way. We'll see. We go, I think, the September 10th, we leave. So
do you like hosting?
Yeah, I don't mind it. I host a lot in the city. Of course, there's more crowd work involved in the city, which is why I like it so much. But this one, there's not a lot of crowd work. It's straight jokes. But it's nice to know when you're hosting for someone like that, that they're not really there for you. And so you can do your material and you want to set up the show well. But if it's not, you know, it takes the pressure off of, you know, being memorable. Does that make sense?
Oh, no. Like I host, yeah. I host just about every show I do. I know no one is ever there to see me.
Mm-hmm. So. Exactly. It's like, I'm just here.
My mom
just
came to see me once and she's like, well, who's up? My mom's like, well, who else is on the show?
Yeah.
Like, well, all right. Sorry.
Yeah. You're like, I see. I see how it is, Mom.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I do enjoy hosting. And so hosting. Ah, what am I? Anyway. But I do enjoy it. And so getting to do that, that was really fun because I got to be silly and do my clean jokes. But it also made me realize that jokes are jokes and clean or dirty, they're still just jokes. And I just enjoy telling jokes.
What do you think the biggest difference is between you as a host and you as a feature, a headliner?
Headliner, I'm definitely more organized. I'm definitely, I'm trying to create a narrative. I have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And with a host, it's like, let's try and figure out what's going to make them laugh. You know, I feel like definitely with hosting, you're like, do they like this kind of joke? Do they like stories? Do they like observational? You know, it's kind of like you're testing the waters for everybody else. And it's definitely more sometimes saying the announcements and,
right,
you know, stuff like that. So it's definitely a big difference. But I think I just enjoy performing. And any chance I get, I'm going to try and be me as much as possible on stage.
Are you at all intimidated by Brian Regan? I mean, you know him because Steve's been opening for him for what, mm-hmm, 3 years maybe?
Yeah, I think maybe longer, maybe four. I've met him before and he's right. So nice.
And,
yeah.
And you've met him on like a personal basis too, right? So mm-hmm. Does that take the pressure off you a little bit more?
Yeah, I guess it's, I've always loved Brian Regan. He was one of the first comics I loved. And then meeting him first, and he'd already seen me do stand up at the National Comedy Center for their Lucy Fest. So I was filthy, you know. And so him asking me to do that was very nice of him to assume that I had 12 minutes of clean material. So yeah, it took the pressure off in a way. But then that first show, I was still like, oh, what if I let him down? You know, it's like comedy daddy. Oh, no. But he's so nice. And if he apparently, I don't know, this has never happened to me. And I don't know if it's ever happened to Steve. But if he's not a fan, if he wants you to do a different joke, he'll just be like, that joke is great, but if you could just do it, you know, I think it's a little edgy for this crowd or something like that. And he'll, I mean, I think that's a rumor that I heard, but he doesn't do it very often. He pretty much is so professional and so nice.
I think Steve told me once that, and I could be wrong, but I think it was a pot joke where he had some audience member wasn't happy that he alluded to, I think it was the joke about his mom or his brother being his mom's pot dealer,
that. Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, that was clean. But, you know, he didn't know how clean he had to be, I guess.
Yeah. And I think this weekend I saw him do that joke. So I don't think it was a issue for Brian. So, but I don't know. I mean, you should ask Steve more about that stuff just because I'm very new and I had Steve pick out the exact jokes that wouldn't get me into trouble, you know?
Well, I think I saw you, well, the first time I saw you was on Colbert.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I think, you know, I don't know if you and Steve are dating yet. I think you guys are writing together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so he plugged, I think that's how I knew you were on Colbert, was he plugged you on Facebook. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll look at this. And you know, I'm like a comedy nerd. So if mm-hmm. I see a stand up on TV, I'm going to watch. And I was like, holy shit. She's kind of good. And when did you start doing stand up?
I started about 6 years ago in New York. And yeah, it was, I wanted to try it for years, but I didn't have the guts. I always thought you had to be like classically trained of some sort, like either a writer or a performer or something before you were allowed to do stand up. The audacity, you know, to try stand up without having some kind of educational background. And then I was just like, fuck it. If I don't try it, I'll never try it. So I just tried it. And it was a blast. I wouldn't say a blast. It was a learning experience. And then eventually it became a blast. But I've been doing it 6 years. Yeah, in New York.
And you're from San Francisco, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Now, have you been back often to do like comedy there?
Oh yeah. Whenever I go home to visit my family, I have like a family of like 50, and they are very supportive. And, so whenever I go home, when I first started going home to do shows there, I had a few friends in San Francisco who were doing stand-up that I met through festivals. And I was like, tell the booker I can bring like 30 people. And, I basically auditioned for these bar shows with my entire family in the audience. And now whenever I go back, they're always like, Caitlin, you want to bring your family to a show?
Yeah, right. Now they're using you.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, use away. I am thrilled, you know. So, but it's one of the most supportive communities, I think, in the country. It's San Francisco. They have one of the best scenes. Just so many shows, so many supportive audiences. And then the comics are also extremely talented and really, really nice.
Well, the history there is so deep. I mean, with Patton Oswalt, I know a buddy, Paul Kozlowski, and he worked in San Francisco for a while, but tons of people come out of there. And are your friends, like, were they surprised that, you know, you did stand up? Because you didn't grow up doing comedy there. So you come back like what the fuck is Caitlin doing here?
I mean, it was, it's funny. I didn't tell, for the first 6 months I did comedy, I didn't tell a single person. I was doing it. I didn't tell any. I was so embarrassed in a way. And then when I started doing it, I started telling people, and legit every reaction I got was, oh yeah, that makes sense. You know, like that was like, oh yeah, you should. Yeah. And it was kind of like the same reaction I had when I started doing comedy. It was like, oh, I should do this, you know, but it was just because I was always such a loud mouth, crazy, like always trying to be silly and make people laugh. But for some reason growing up, I was like trying to be like the sad kid, you know, I have so many feelings, I'm so deep. But then I was just like always a ham. So it didn't make any sense. So whenever I tell people, they're like, oh yeah. That makes more sense than you doing art. That is much better.
Where the hell were they, you know, 6 years ago or, you know, six years before you started? Like, dude, who knows where he could have been by now?
I know. Don't worry. I think about that often.
I do ask that though. Because I started when I was 32, I think, and 32 or 33, I forget the year, but like, it was something I had always wanted to do since high school. And I have a lot of regrets about not starting. Like, do you regret that too?
Sometimes I do, but most of the time I don't. I think about me in my early 20s and what a mess and insecure drunk I was that I cannot see myself still being in it, having started that early. I think my one regret is that when I thought about doing it when I was like 24 or 25, that I actually just did it then. But starting it, I started when I was 26, 27. So I think when I had that thought, I should have just done it instead of starting when I was like 22 or 21, because I think I would have just made a lot of mistakes, drank myself to death, and fucked everybody in sight. So I think I feel like when you start later, you have a better idea of who you are and what you will and won't say. And of course, there's always those stumbling, you know, first 2 years where you say anything to try and get attention. That of course happens, but you have a better idea of what your voice is going to be just because you're a little bit more sure of yourself as an older comedian. And well, I remember, say older as in 26, you know.
I remember coming off the stage one time and it was just an open mic and this guy came up to me and goes, man, you have lived a life. And I was like, you asshole, you just tell me I'm old.
Yeah.
That's all you did.
Yeah. But if you lived a life, you have more to talk about, you know.
Yeah.
I always say this, I had two failed careers before I started stand up. And one was as an athlete and the other one was as an artist. And so it's like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm really going to do it. Okay. I'm going to go balls to the wall. And I think that fear of failure is kind of, it's not the end of the world like it is with younger comics. You know what I mean? Like when you're older, it's like, I've already failed. Like, what's the worst that happens? I have a sad month and then I figure something else out. You know what I mean? But yeah, that fear of failure isn't as life ending as it is with like a young comic. So we're probably willing to make a few more, to take a few more chances.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I don't know. Definitely. No. Like I cheated because like I knew I was going to talk to you. I binged your two podcasts. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, I'm all caught up on everything Caitlin Palufo. So,
oh, wow. Well, I'm so sorry.
the only thing I'm missing is your social security number, and we'll get that afterward.
Okay, sure. Yeah. No, please make my credit better. I have student loans.
That's not going to happen. But no, so like you played soccer, and the two podcasts, Beasts and Good Time Gale. basically, you're talking about being a drunk and being an athlete. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that. Let's go with the athlete first.
Sure.
You played soccer at San mm-hmm. Diego State?
UC San Diego.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It doesn't matter though.
How far are they away?
They're about 30 minutes away from each other.
Okay.
But one definitely has smarter people.
There you go.
I'm just kidding. I didn't have the grades to get into either school, but I was good enough at soccer that they let me in anyway. So
is that D1 or D2?
It's D2. Okay. Yeah. That's how I was able to get in. They don't have scholarships, but they can soccer list you.
Yeah.
If you meet all the basic requirements to get into the school, then you can, they can put you on a list and you'll automatically get in, which is what happened. And that's actually what happened with the scandal. That's how people were getting their children in.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But I was actually the case that is what it's used for. So,
so no one had to go to jail for you.
No one had to go to jail for me. I definitely earned my spot physically, not academically.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So
first of all, how did you ever leave San Diego? I was there once, never wanted to leave.
Really?
Yeah, I was there for a week. And well, so I went from Baltimore. We went over for a wedding mm-hmm. and I don't know, it was like July. So it must have been about 95 degrees in Baltimore. We landed in San Diego and it's true. I mean, it's always like 72, 78, mm-hmm. something like that. No humidity. And it was just amazing for a week. My buddy Brian, it was his wedding and we were in the rental car together and it rained. I saw 4 or 5 drops of the windshield. He's just like, oh, I'm so sorry. I can't believe you came out here and it's this horrible weather. Mm-hmm. I was like, go eat a dick. Like this is the best weather we've had in months. And but we left and got back on the plane and at 3 a.m. we got into Baltimore and it was 85 degrees and solid humidity. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is the worst day of my life.
Yeah.
So I would never. So I told him, I'm like, dude, if I ever move, it's San Luis Obispo. And like that's where he worked. But I'm like, if I ever move to San Diego, I am never coming back.
Yeah. I mean, I moved to San Diego at 18 and I moved there for soccer. Right. And I coming from San Francisco or the Bay Area, the weather was always like very similar. No seasons, always pretty much between, 50 and 80 all the time. I think in San Francisco, it's just foggier more often. But yeah, it just... The weather is beautiful, but it's boring. I mean, if you spend a long amount of time there, San Diego is great. Okay. I don't want to knock on San Diego. Beautiful town. Great stadium. Padres Stadium is fantastic.
Or gorgeous.
Gorgeous stadium. It's just, I think I was an East Coast soul. And so I'm there and it just, okay, I could do that. Oh, I could do that. Yeah, sure. It's also very not diverse. It's
in San Diego?
In San Diego. Yeah. It's very, I don't know. It's just very suburbia, like city suburb is what okay. it is. You All know, right. a lot of chains, a lot of, there's not a lot of mom and pops and driving culture, which I'm not a huge fan of. So, and I know that now because I, right after San Diego, I moved to New York and I like literally spent 1 year in New York and I was like, this is my home. This is who I am, and I can't imagine living anywhere else.
How long did it take you to feel like you were at home? Like just the year or did you know almost immediately?
Almost immediately because I got there and I was staying in a hostel. When I first moved there, I had 2 suitcases. I was staying in a hostel. There were cockroaches in the hostel. And then I found an apartment. I was sleeping on the floor and I was still like, this is the best city in the world. I can go anywhere I want at any point in time. I can also be invisible. I've never felt so free, both in what I could do and also just, I didn't care about how I looked all the time. Does that make sense? Like it was just so,
I'm guessing nobody in New York gave a shit what you look like either.
Exactly. Everybody had their own thing. Everybody was, and you're just surrounded by driven people. And it was inspiring. And I was just, I think I was there for 2 weeks and I was just like, this is it. I am so happy. And I was sleeping on the floor. So I think that's a sign that it was going to stick.
I moved from Binghamton, which is, you've been here a couple times. And mm-hmm. But I moved to a smaller town in Pennsylvania, Lock Haven, which is like nothing. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to Baltimore. And as soon as I got out of the car in Baltimore, like I saw people walking a little faster and I'm like, oh, this is my speed. Mm-hmm. And I felt home immediately. I got stabbed a month in and I'm like, I'm still not moving.
Yeah.
Like, this is fun. Like it's better to get stabbed in Baltimore than it would be to get stabbed in Lock Haven. That was my theory.
I think that's right.
I was like, yeah, why not? And it was like, okay, well now I have a story to tell. So like if you had to sleep on the floor with cockroaches, mm-hmm. fuck it. Who cares? That's going to be a nice joke. It's going to be a nice story when, you know, the movie comes along.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember, walking down the street and I apparently walked in front of a car and he like looked out his window and he goes, move, bitch. And I looked at him like, and I was about to say something back and he goes, if you say a word, I'll rip your fucking face off. And I remember being like, oh, but still like, of course, I'll rip your fucking face off. Like, it's
right.
It'll tell you exactly, it'll put you in your place, a big city,
My sister went to school at John Jay, criminal justice. Mm-hmm. And so I got off the bus and I'm going to see her. And the first thing she says is, never look up at a billboard. That's how they know you're a tourist. So like, I was like, all right. So I, even to this day, when I'm in the city, straight ahead, I'm like, all right, you know, I'll jaywalk if I need to, I'll cut across cars. Like I go into New York City mode.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I'm polite upstate, but fuck it. You know, anything goes in the city.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I feel like I still do have a little bit of that California nice, in New York because I say hi to all my neighbors and, you know, I'm very friendly. Hi, you know, but, I've also lived in before I lived in the same place for like 8 years. So, and I worked in the neighborhood and everything, but it's just like, you gotta be nice, you know, but there's definitely at the same point, you've got to be able to flip the switch and be like, I'll rip your fucking face off. You know, it's gotta be in there in order to stay. I feel like.
Could you imagine starting comedy anywhere else?
Sometimes I think about how that would have helped. I don't think I would have gotten where I am faster, but I think it would have been easier. Does that make sense? Like I look at places like Atlanta and San Francisco and how they have such, you know, it's like such great scenes, very supportive, very helpful. But I find I can only imagine it would be so hard to leave just because they are so nurturing. So I'm glad. I don't know if I ever would have had the courage to go to New York or LA if I had started at one of those two places, just because it always feels so good when I'm there.
Yeah.
So, I'm glad I started in New York because you could do, I think I was for the first 2 years, I was doing like 20 to 30 open mics a week and you can just get really good. And by good, I mean comfortable on stage really fast. And that's what happened. I got late night when I was four and a half years in. And I think it was just from repetition.
Were people pissed off about that? Like, fucking quick.
I mean, I don't think no one said it to my face. Everybody was very supportive. I think because they saw that I have a pretty good work ethic. But I also see it as like, wow, that was really fast. And then I see other comics who I admire, still admire, who don't have a late night. And that seems like a cruel injustice to me.
Right.
And I'm sure they would have every right to be like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? But no one said anything to my face and I haven't heard any mumblings, but I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't blame them either. You know?
Yeah. I think I would be jealous, but you see the set and they see you work and you're like, well, it's not like you don't deserve it. Like,
well, yeah, funny. I mean, and it's also having the right 5 minutes for the time.
Right.
You know, I think people who have been doing it for a long time understand that half of this business is luck. And luck definitely plays a part in it. And I got lucky with Colbert. I got seen with the right set at the right time. You know, they were wanting women. They wanted strong women. And that was my whole shtick. And I happened to be at this festival that the booker was at. And it just like, it all came together. And I got very lucky. And I always make sure to mention that whenever I talk to someone who has been doing it a lot, I got extremely lucky.
What was that process like?
It was a lot of back and forth. A lot of my process, I got very lucky, was very quick. Because sometimes, I think you've probably talked to Steve about his, but his took like 6 to 8 months. And mine took about two to three. And that's from being seen and then taping. So, and then I got extremely lucky after that because I got aired a month after that. And sometimes I had a friend wait a year to get aired. Wow. So yeah, so I got so 3 months between being seen and then being on TV. Extremely lucky. But she saw me at a festival. I did my clean material or the set that I would want to do for late night. She didn't say anything to me. And so I was like, okay, I'll just send her a tape sometime in the future if I have one worthy of it. And then she saw me do a filthy set at a comedy club. And she came up to me afterwards and was like, I would love to work with you.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, I was filthy. I mean, I did crowd work. I did everything wrong, like to audition for a late night set. And then we met up. I gave her a transcript. She asked for a tape. I got her a tape. And then it's just really back and forth with their legal department on what I can and can't say. And so it was like the transcript was to a T. And that process was the most nerve-wracking, just because you hear these horror stories of people being like, oh yeah, I was passed to do late night. And then they took it away at the last minute because of this one joke I had, or because they just decided they didn't want this anymore, or they wanted to put someone else on. And so I was just like, ah! That was like the most traumatizing 2 months. Traumatizing and encouraging, but it was, it can really shake your confidence if it doesn't go your way. And I totally see that. And having been very lucky, but just waiting, you know, it's just a waiting game, waiting for someone you've never met before to be like, yeah, that's fine. You can say that one joke you've been working on for years. That one's good enough, you know.
When you walk out of that curtain, I mean, what goes through your mind? Like, do you feel like, okay, I see the crowd and it's just a regular show? Because you got to know, like, no, it's going to be on TV.
Well, they pre-tape. And so it was like a regular show, except you were on the most historic stage in
right.
comedy history. But yeah, it was, I actually had like a minor panic attack right before I went on stage. And this was something that was happening for a while. My heart would race. I would start sweating. I would get really hot. And then I'd have to rapid fire talk to someone. And that was happening for a while. And then it happened during this, even though I was trying to stay calm, I was doing my breathing exercises, but I did a rapid fire run through my set with my friend and I said it the wrong way. I said the old joke, or the old version of the joke, but they had to change it because of legal. And I look at him and we both, like, the panic in our eyes is like, oh no. And then they say, okay, Caitlin, you're up.
Oh shit.
And I'm like, and so I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And I didn't even have time to think until they put me on the line. I like wave to my dad. I give him a hug and he's like, well, you can do it. And I was like, I don't think I can. But then I went out and I saw my family like 4 rows back. That theater is very small. You think it's expansive, but it is very small. Everybody is like pretty close to you. And I could see my sister and my mom and my friends very clearly. And that saved me, I think. I saw them and I waved vigorously at them and they were so thrilled. And it kind of put me at ease. And then my first joke hit and then I was fine. It was like muscle memory. But yeah, it was terrifying.
Well, I watched it a couple nights ago and again, loved it. I mean, I loved it the first time, loved it the second time. I am curious, did you ever go through the comments section on YouTube and read them?
No, my friends did though. And they sent me some screenshots. My mom did, actually. She was like, Caitlin, the comments are good.
Like, very good.
Yeah, I didn't. I still haven't really gone through them just because, you know, I'm just waiting for that one. Apparently there was one nasty one on Facebook that my cousin got very upset about. And she didn't tell me, but she told Steve while I was in earshot and I was like, oh, I wonder what that person said, but it's better to not know, you know. I think they said something like throw her career in the garbage or something like that.
May I read you a couple of my favorites?
Oh God, sure. I guess. Are they nice?
yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I mean, they're funny. Let's just say they're funny.
What kind of podcast is this?
I'd like to say I do this with everybody, but I've had 2 people on who have been on Colbert, so
okay,
we'll see.
Sure.
This is one of the best ones from Judith. I'll just give you the first name. Extremely funny without the foul language. Love it. So you would have a fan for about 4 minutes in your next set.
Yeah.
I like this one. It's a little bit of an exchange. Brian says, this one's got a future. Then down there, Mike says, bottom 20% of current comics. I don't know where he got those numbers.
I don't know. That's so bottom 20%. Oh, I'm sure
he knows all of them. Which is probably good.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you think about it.
I don't think he's seen enough comedy. If he's going on what's on TV, then he might be. Is that a
I apologize for my cat's tail.
It's
got a mind of its own.
No, I love it.
I'm sure you'll meet all three. Here's another one from Miguel. Pretty sure I would have enjoyed this if I was drunk. I mean, I thought it was fine sober. So yeah, I assume so.
If I were drunk. Yeah, sure. I mean, that's what I aim for. Those are my people. I mean, good time gal. Those are my people.
All right. Here's another exchange, which I thought it was funny because of how different they are. Adrian says, love it. 3 exclamation points. Right under, this is a reply. Oh my God, there hasn't been a bomb like this since Nagasaki. Stinko. Which, all right, I didn't get that.
That's, it's funny. I think someone's brought up I think that same exact comment. And I was like, well, I'm not going to say whether it was good or bad, but I do know for a fact I did not bomb.
So. No, of course not. Which, that's why I thought it was so great, because it's like, dude, everybody laughed.
Yeah.
Like, it was loud.
Yeah, that's funny. But I think someone did bring up that comment and was like, I was like, well, I know I have enough confidence to be like, I didn't bomb.
Right, of course not.
You could not like it, but right. I didn't bomb.
Yeah, yep. All right, here's a good one from Steve. Damn, and at first I thought she was gay. Well, she answered my question.
Very factual. Happy to help.
See. All right, let's see here. Okay, here's another one. Oh, wait, no, this is a couple down. Another from Steve, a different Steve. I tried to like it. I miss old comedy, you know, the kind that was funny.
Oh, I mean.
I know, it was weird. And then here's another one, and I'll end on a good one. I mean, she's not funny, but I'm in love.
What does that even mean?
I don't know, but Teddy Bear likes her.
Teddy Bear.
Right. I have no idea. So, but no, I've never been in a late night, so I couldn't do that. But I just thought it was funny. It's like, dude, how could you not like the material? And how can you reply to somebody? I mean, it's a crowd full of laughter. And to say stinko.
Yeah, that's, I mean, but those are the people who are going to say that no matter what. You know, there's, I mean, if people live and die by the comments, then you're in trouble because the comments are, people are going to try and be vicious just because that's what gets a lot of uplikes. But whatever. I feel bad for those people. They're very negative.
I know. Well, I do wonder, like, what do they think is funny? Like, do they have a sense of humor? Is anything funny to them?
Half the time, it's I was prepared to have all negative comments just because I was a woman. The women late nights are much harsher than any of them. Like, men get the benefit of the doubt. If you go through and you can kind of compare and contrast the women and the men, it's amazing how much people talk about the women's appearance before they talk about the content. And then it's also, with men, they're like, oh, the jokes are good, but the audience wasn't there. And like, I'm watching it, I'm like, they're full on bombing and it's not making sense. And it's like, but they're like, oh, the jokes are there. Good try. You'll get them next time. You know, and it's just like with the women, they're like, she sucks. What a bitch. You know,
women aren't funny.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was just like prepared for all of those. But my mom sent me a lot of screenshots that it was favorable. So I'll take that.
I thought it was, I mean, I picked out the ones that were like the random ones that weren't any good. Mm-hmm. Like for the most part, they were in Steve Rogers too. You know, a lot of them were fine. I don't think he looked at his.
No, we both decided. Yeah.
sorry to break your heart then.
Oh, no. I think he looked at mine and he was like, you're doing great.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
When it first came out, I was like, sure. Great. Thanks.
But, I think a lot of his were like, how come there were no Steve like Captain America mm-hmm. jokes? It's like,
yeah,
all right, whatever. And then Steve's like, oh yeah, I'm working on those.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to give the commenters what they want, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
So I do love Good Time Gal, your podcast.
And, thank you.
Oh my God. It's so funny. And I am curious. You're basically talking to comedians about how much of a dickbag they were, like a drunken mess.
Yeah. And, drunken mess. Mm-hmm.
Is that a pastime of yours?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I used to work in restaurants and that was just, I mean, it was how you bonded with your coworkers was everybody becoming a drunken mess together and making huge mistakes, and then I also played sports in college. I mean, that's a drunken mess, you know, but we're doing it as a team. And so it's literally, I didn't drink at all in high school. And then college, I really made up for lost time. And I love it. I love drinking. It's so much fun. The camaraderie, the social aspect, the lack of inhibitions. I love a party. I'm a party girl. And I, now that I'm older, you know, I weigh how much partying I can do. I'm a little more responsible about it. But yeah, I just love drinking. And so I've wanted to start this podcast for a while just because drunk stories are my favorite, because it's usually half the time it's completely out of character. And you're like, you did what? That's insane. Like, they're always the best stories because they're always ridiculous and what you wouldn't expect. So I was like, yeah, let's make a podcast about it.
It's really entertaining. What's your favorite drunken story yourself?
Of myself? I don't know if there's any favorites. I've gotten arrested in Mexico at the Mexico border.
Who hasn't?
Thank you. That's San Diego for you. I mean, I got arrested for being drunk in public and I had to spend the night in the drunk tank. That was fun. Just recently, I didn't drink for a month and I lost 15 pounds.
No
and
then shit. Yeah.
I mean, that's how much I drink. I really enjoy it. and then I went on the road with Steve and Brian. And the first night I got obliterated, like hammered on Brian's bus, listening to like just like WAP. You know what song?
Oh, yeah.
I
know the controversy.
Yes. So I made them put it on and then I'm dancing like an idiot. And then I promptly lose my phone and my keys. just one night coming back after a month off and I just fucking half blackout, lose my keys and my wallet. Turns out they were all on, I left them on Brian's bus and whoops. They were very nice and polite and let me play my dirty tunes.
What were you going to do? Not drink on Brian Regan's bus?
I guess that's true. Yeah. I mean, everybody was pretty hammered, but we had a good time in Bloomington. I'll tell you that much.
What'd you do on your 21st birthday? Because I'm setting you up because I want to tell my favorite drunk story.
Oh, good. So, oh, this is exciting.
What was your 21st birthday like?
My 21st birthday was pretty tame because I had a boyfriend who was in the military at the time and he got shipped out to Iraq on my birthday. So wow. We were pretty tame. And so then we broke up eventually. And so my 22nd birthday, we celebrated like it was my 21st. And we went to a bar called In Cahoots. And I had a lot of shots out of test tubes and got very, very drunk. My friend carried me home like over his shoulder. And then I like half realized where I was and I wiggled and he dropped me over a fence. I mean, we had a good time and I looked cute. I'll tell you what, I had those sweet little cutoffs. I was wearing little boots. I was line dancing. Woo! Mama was fun. And it was great. And I was with my best friend, Chirsty. It was so much fun. It was a big group of us. But I got hammered very unresponsibly. Don't do that, kids. But we had a sober person drive us home, which is
what
you should do. Yes.
Yeah. We drank at Mansfield, which is a Pennsylvania college nobody's ever heard of. Mm-hmm. And small town, we only had one bar. So like if you had a car and you were like driving, which almost never happened, mm-hmm. fuck it. Who cares? Nobody's going to stop you. My 21st birthday, I was coming down the hill and I told my buddies, I got to the bar and I'm like, hey, I only have two rules. I don't want any Jaeger and I don't want any New Jersey Turnpikes. And do you know what that is?
What's a New Jersey Turnpike?
A turnpike. And I have no idea if this is actually true. I looked it up a long, long time ago, but it's supposed to be a little bit of everything behind the bar. And then if you're really an asshole bartender, you'll wash out the rag. You'll rinse it out.
Oh, yeah.
And then top it off. So I was like, those are my only two rules. I'll drink whatever you guys want. I don't like black licorice. So no Jaeger, no turnpikes. So we're there for maybe like 2 hours in this bar. Only one bar on campus or in the town. So we're there. And then like maybe an hour or two goes by. My buddy Bill comes in late from class and he brings down Jaeger. And he's like, who wants Jaeger? I was like, son of a bitch. So I had a Jaeger shot because you can't say no. It's your birthday.
What are you going to say? No, of course.
Right. Wasted liquor. Mm-hmm. And I had everything. Now, I kept track of everything I drank because I wanted to see how progressively worse my writing got. So I've got it somewhere. It was like a kamikaze, a lunchbox, a pitcher of Miller Lite or Coors Light, whatever it was. And it was just an obscene amount. And at the very end of the night, this guy came over and he goes, hey, man, you want a cherry pie? And I'm like, sure. And he gives me this drink, and it was a Turnpike.
So
he got me. And happy ending, because I fired the guy from the radio station a couple of days later. So I won.
You fired him?
Well, it was like a fraud thing. But yeah, I was general manager of my radio station, or assistant general manager at the time. And I ended up firing him for different reasons. But I'm like, payback.
Yeah. Don't call it a cherry pie when it's a Turnpike.
So I get done drinking. I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to go across the street to Dunkin' Donuts. And I got something to eat. And I locked myself into the bathroom, passed out,
no.
Got sick, passed out. My two friends went across the street to get my buddy Bill, the guy with the the guy with the Jaeger. And it's like, hey, he's hitting on this woman. And they're like, Bill, Mike's locked in the bathroom. We need your help. He goes, what the fuck are you talking about? He goes, he's locked in the bathroom, man. We can't get him out. He came over, got the manager to unlock the door. He had to clean up all the vomit, everything.
He cleaned everything up.
We walked home. He got me in, like, we're walking way across campus, like 15 minutes, and I'm draped across his shoulders, basically. He got me into bed. He wrote his phone number. This is like 2004. So he wrote his phone number on my arm. So just in case I was going to die, he sent my girlfriend at the time an instant message. Say, hey, Mike's here. Hopefully he wakes up. If not, it's not my fault. And and then, like, so that was my 21st birthday. I woke up late for class the next day. I had a law class with my professor, like the faculty advisor, and got in there late. He's like, how are you doing? I go, good. And, you know, probably breathed all sorts of alcohol on him.
Yeah.
And then sat through class, went to another class, and a professor said, heard you had a fun night. That's how small campus was. The professors knew I got fucking hammered, and that's it. So I went back for probably the next 3 or 4 years, I would hear fragments of that night played back to me, because I don't remember almost anything. Like, from when I walked out to when I got to Dunkin' Donuts, I know nothing. It's just all these stories that were told back to me.
Oh, that's always the worst. It's like, man, you were crazy. Woo! And you're like, don't tell me, okay? I don't need to know. That's my birthday present. Don't tell me. Leave me. Just let me have my... I was napping. I was taking a nap.
Yeah, for, you know, on the toilet.
Yeah.
And it was comfortable from what I remember.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, Dunkin' Donuts, they keep their bathrooms very clean, okay?
They sure do. Well, you've got a couple of Dunkin' Donuts in New York City.
Yeah. Well, those ones, not so much. But I'm sure everywhere outside, but nothing in New York City is clean, so.
Do you get used to that, though? Like you're like I know now it's like a pandemic and you want everything to be clean, but it's like, we're in New York. Oh, yeah. It's like that old Carlin line, where it's like you could swim in the Hudson and nobody got sick because we were covered in raw tempered shit.
Yeah.
So like we're used to it.
I mean, this is the cleanest the subways have ever been. It just took a pandemic for them to be sterilized, you know, but I mean, New York is filthy and that's how I like it. You know, give me a little grunge. I don't like everything to be neat and orderly. Give me a little chaos. That's what I like.
Well, the real reason I wanted to talk to you was that you have a cat now.
I sure do.
I do. I want to talk to you about Kat. Is she around?
I think she is. I think I might be able to find her. Oh, yes, she's right there.
That's the thing with cats is like you have no idea where they are. And you got to put a bell around them just in case. And then they don't like the bell. So you're going to piss them off.
She's sleeping right here. You want to see her?
No, I've seen her before. Not that I don't want to see her.
You've met Bowie before? Oh, yeah.
Online. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, Steven, I talked to Steve in Liverpool when he was up. It was like back in December. Mm-hmm. But so tell me about the cat.
I love her more than I think I will love my children. She is incredible. She's very sweet. She's about 5 months old now. So she's so full of energy. It's exhausting, but, she's so sweet. She's hypoallergenic. So, she has really short hair and she's really big ears and she looks kind of like a goblin, but I love her so much. I've wanted a cat for so long, but I'm so allergic that I just couldn't get one. My eyes swell up. I break out into hives. So I just, and then I sneeze like crazy. My nose goes running. It's like unlivable. So I had to save up my money and get this cat. And I originally wanted a Sphinx cat, which is completely nude, no hair. And that was a tough sell for Steve. Steve wouldn't go for the no hair cat. And then I was like, how about this one? And he was like, it looks kind of weird, but okay. And now that we have it, he's completely in love. And I love to say I told you so all the time.
It takes about 3 seconds to fall in love with a cat.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. I've got three, and I got two of them. They're from the same litter, and just a black cat, Sweet D. I'm a Sunny fan. So Sweet D, and then her brother is a tabby, Dennis. Mm-hmm. And both of those guys, I got them when they were like 5 or 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I slept okay, but like at 4 o'clock in the morning, Sweet D would bite my back. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, well, that's not what I thought you were going to do. And I throw her around the room, and she's like, oh, cool, games. I'm like, no, it's not fun. But you can't, I mean, you could get mad at them for like a second, but like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
She woke me up this morning at 7 a.m. just licking my face. And what's weird is with her, like she'll come in and she'll cuddle and then she'll lick your face and you'll open your eyes and you look at her and she's like half licking it while she's asleep. Like you can tell her eyes are closed. She's purring. She's licking your face. And then you're like, okay. And then you have to maneuver her to go to sleep down here. Okay. And then she'll like 2 minutes later, she'll wake up and start licking your face again, but she's still half asleep. So you can just move her wherever, but she's so loving and kind. And then she just goes batshit and runs all around the fucking room. Just
for no reason.
0 to 6 for no reason.
Yeah.
And she plays fetch. We have fun. Like she'll bring me a piece of paper. I'll throw it. She'll get it and she'll come back and we'll play fetch.
That's amazing.
Yeah, she's I think she's smart.
How you said that with complete surprise.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like cats, or maybe she's dumb. Maybe cats are like, who are uninterested or smarter than dogs just because they're like, I don't need this. But then she's like more like a dog. So maybe she's dumber. Who knows?
Yeah. I think cats are the smarter of the two just because they're like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like we're not go. I'll miss the food, but go.
Yeah, exactly. But she seems to need a lot of attention. So,
well, you took her, you know, and again, like I feel bad because I listened to your episode of Beasts and you're talking about this or, you know, it's like, so you took her on the road or maybe I listened to Steve's podcast and he was talking about it, but
yeah.
Took her to Indiana. Was that an ordeal?
It was and it wasn't. I got her certified as a, what's it called? A therapy cat.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. And so it just, you just have to talk to a therapist. And I've been sleeping better with the cat and she helps with our anxiety, me and Steve. And so we just had to get that on paper. And so we did that. And so I emailed the hotel and I was like, here's their certification. Let me know if there's any issues. And they never got back to us. And so we're like, we don't know if this is okay or not. So we had to like sneak her in, even though we did nothing wrong. We did everything they asked us to do. We just never got a confirmation. So we were like, should we be doing, so that was stressful only because, you know, we weren't given the automatic green light. But other than that, she's very well behaved. Like she's litter trained, obviously. And she doesn't tear up furniture or anything because we squirt her with the squirt gun whenever she goes after the couch. And so squirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we brought her scratching post. We brought her food. We brought her and tons of toys. So she was fine. And then we'd take her with us. And so we just put her in the backpack and we go to restaurants and just sit outside and she hangs out with us. She's very chill. Yeah. But no, I think the only stressful part was the hotel. And that was only because we weren't sure if it was allowed. So
I still haven't. I've had my cats for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. I still have not stayed overnight without them. Like,
really?
Like I haven't left my apartment. I mean, I've left my apartment, but nobody really wants me at their place. So that works out well for everybody. But no, I feel like I turned down a wedding in Michigan and like, hope they're not listening because part of it, like I couldn't afford it. But also I was like, I don't want to leave my cats for 2 days. And like, I'm a 37-year-old man. That's not, I don't think that's healthy.
I mean, it is, but it isn't. You know yourself. If you don't want to be without your cats, why put yourself through that? I mean, it's your life. All right. If you can't afford it and you don't get to see your cats, fuck it. It's not worth
it. Right. Get married in my living room or don't have me.
Exactly. I'm with you. We bring her with us whenever we can. It looks like this next run we do with Regan, we're not going to be able to bring her.
Oh, no.
And we're a little nervous about what we're going to do, where we're going to, you know, but our roommate should be home by then. So hopefully we can leave her with the roommate. But oh, we'll see. It's going to break our hearts completely. But it's also like we have to do it just because we know. We have to break the seal, I guess.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Have you thought about getting cameras in the room so you can keep an eye on her?
No, but if I bring that up to Steve, he'll probably do it.
yeah, that's something I thought about. My sister sent me a link. She's like, you should do this. And I'm like, that's not money I should ever spend for that reason.
Yeah. But,
and I know, like if I did that, that's the only thing I would do at the office or in the car, wherever. Mm-hmm. I'd be like I'd get in an accident and be like, what were you doing? I'm like, watching my cats.
Yeah. And I think that's totally fine.
Yeah.
If it was another cat lover, the officer would probably let you off, you know?
Yeah. Although, you know, my brother-in-law's a cop. I should not make fun. But I can't imagine that's the reason that, like, yeah, okay, why not? Yeah, go for it.
Probably not. Yeah, we let our cat, luckily, she likes to be in the car. So we just let her loose, and she knows we just block the area to get under to where you drive, obviously, the pedals. Right. And so, but other than that, she sleeps on her lap. She sleeps in the back. She plays with her toys in the back. We have a litter box back there, so she just... she keeps to herself and then sleeps on her lap and makes us feel so loved. And we're just like, oh, you little schmoopy. But we also started doing that with her very early. Like, we got her and immediately in the car, in the backpack, you're going to be a travel cat.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that you're writing more material about a cat?
No, I have one.
God damn it. I wanted was some validation that it wasn't just me.
I mean... I wrote one joke about it, but honestly, I think I like it too much to write jokes about it. I usually write jokes about things that annoy me or things that upset me. So I'm so in love that the joke that I wrote was about how everybody makes fun of how weird my cat looks. And I'm like, I love this thing more than anything. So I'll kill you. You know, so that's the only joke I've written about her. But I love her so much.
My dad will call me and because he'll come over and see the cats. I don't think he's called me once in the last 20 years and asked how I was doing. He will call me and say, how's Dennis doing? And I'm like, you dickhead. I need a hug.
I'm fine. And my name is, it's not Dennis, asshole. Yeah.
No, my parents are fine with it. I had a joke a while ago. I got four cats in 6 days. And I had a joke that worked pretty well, but I didn't tell my parents I got cats. And then my dad walked in and he saw a cat and he goes, oh, you got a cat? I'm like, yeah, I got a cat. And then he saw the second one. He goes, you got two cats? I'm like, yeah. Then he saw the third and he goes, you got three cats? I'm like, yeah, I have three cats. And I think the joke was when he saw the fourth cat, he knew exactly then that he was never going to get grandchildren.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, fine. Those are his fur babies, okay? That's what he should see it as. My son is happy with his kitties.
I think he's just happier that his mom is dead, so she won't have to see what happened to her grandson.
Yeah. Luckily, my older sister already had kids. Otherwise, I think my mom would be worried. So she's got her grandkids, so she can let me have my little fur cats and dress it in sweaters and put it in backpacks and not be like, is this a substitute for the children I want you to have? Yes, it is.
I dated a woman a long time ago, and after we broke up, she got ferrets. And her mom started calling them.
You did a number on her, huh?
Damn straight. And, hey, I got two lesbian ex-girlfriends and a ferret lady. So maybe it's better that I have four cats. But her mom called the ferrets grand ferrets. And I was like, you know what? That might be too far.
My mom calls Bowie her grand. Let me see my grandbaby. And then I show Bowie. But yeah, I mean, honestly, sometimes it's like a weird way of showing support. You know, I love you. I love your choices. And if your choice is ferrets, I'm going to love these ferrets. That's just good parenting.
I lived with hermit crabs for about a year. Yeah, they were okay in a sense that they didn't make much noise and you could forget about them and they were going to live, I think.
Yeah.
But that's it. They were just, aside from that, it's like, oh yeah, there's a 55 gallon tank in my living room. That wasn't fun.
No. Yeah. I can't imagine. You want something you can cuddle, you know, in order to call it a grand baby. You know what
I mean? Yeah. Yeah. My dad never came over and said, hey, let me see my grand crabs.
Yeah. Yeah, that just sounds like a really bad case of a STD.
Which reminds me of my grandma.
Yeah.
No.
Mammy!
So this is a true story. I lived in Baltimore, and my ex-girlfriend, a lesbian, she called me. She goes, hey, I want to go have crabs at my friend's house, but I can't get crabs without you. And I was like, oh, okay. Now, her friends wanted me there. So I called my grandma, and I told her that exact sentence. And she's like, yeah, that's exactly what grandpa told me. And I was like, well, I didn't need to hear that, but thank you.
You have some fun grandparents.
Yeah, they're the best. Are you pretty close to the family?
Yeah, pretty close. As close as you can be when you live across the country. Yeah. We Zoom a lot. We text. We send pictures. I come home like twice a year. And then usually my mom or my dad will come out once a year. So I see them pretty often. But I'll come home for like 2 weeks at a time and really hang out.
Do they make it a point to see you on stage?
Yes. My mom, the last time I was in San Francisco, came to every single show I did. And my dad, on the other hand, will see one. And he's like, that's as much as I can do, Kate. I love you. But that's, and I'm like, I get it. That's fine. He's like, they're all made up, right? I was like, absolutely. It's all made up.
You're such a great daughter.
Thank you. Thank you. A better daughter would not tell those stories at all. But here we are.
Well, the one time I met you in Syracuse, it was such a fun night. And you were only at that mic once, right?
Yeah, that was the only
okay,
time.
Okay. So, and first of all, I have a beef with you because I really enjoyed Tuesdays with Stories for so long. And then they started talking about Steve and gave him a nickname that I'm fairly certain they didn't hear from him. But they started calling him Steve Big Dick Rogers.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah. You know, I didn't need to know that. But awesome. It seems to me that they talk about him every other episode. So mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime. It's funny because Joe started calling him that without having seen my set.
Oh, really?
And, yeah. He was like, doesn't he just seem like he'd have a big dick? I think he just seemed like he's so nice and patient. Like, yeah, I think he's got a big dick. You know, he's confident. And then I heard that. And the next time I saw a joke and I was like, you know, I have a joke about that, right? And he was like, no. And then eventually he saw my set and he was like, oh, I guess it's true. So, yeah, I remember I stopped listening to it. I still listen to that podcast a little bit. Joe is a buddy and Mark is an acquaintance, I guess. I don't know who the fuck I, it doesn't matter. But they called Steve Big Dick Rogers and Caitlin Regular Vagina Palufo.
Yes. And yeah, I remember that.
I was like, I gotta stop listening to this.
but we were at that mic and you're there with Steve's parents. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they had seen you before, or his mom at least.
Oh yeah, they've seen me a bunch.
Okay.
I don't think they've seen me do those jokes.
Right.
But they had seen me perform before, and they're big comedy fans, so they're.
It was so much fun to watch because I think Steve went up before you, and he did well, and then you came up, and it looked like you were trying to do softer material, and then you broke and said, I'm sorry. Like, and his mom's like, you can do it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And holy shit. I've never heard that room louder. And they're just, because the jokes are really funny. Mm-hmm. It was all sexual stuff about Steve and it was funny material. And the situation was, it could have been so awkward, but it was just beautifully done.
I give them all the credit because they are so, such comedy fans. They love comedy. They love Steve and, very supportive and they have such good senses of humor that when I sat down, his dad, Rick, said right away, I guess it skips a generation. And, yeah. And I knew that with them that I'd be able to play off them a little bit, especially with, Shelley, his mom. She's super quick, super funny. Like at the end, I was like, are we okay, Shelley? She's like, amen, sister.
Oh, my God.
It was so funny. They're so funny. They're just lovely. And yeah, so that was really fun. But if it were any other parents, I feel like that could go the opposite way.
Have you ever had a boyfriend or girlfriend? I don't want to say you're close-minded, but have you ever had a boyfriend's parents see you do stand-up?
Yes. My ex-boyfriend, when I first started, his parents, they're from North Carolina. And so I went and did a festival in North Carolina and his whole family came. And they were, you know, Southern good time people. And they were into it as well. They were totally fine. But that one I didn't, they are also religious. So I knew not to do, I had like two jokes about, his name was Max. We're on good terms. It's fine. About him in the bedroom. And I knew not to do those. And it was also, they were extremely graphic. So I just skipped them just right. To be like, I'm not going to do that to you, Max. Yeah. And actually his parents or his mom, they were in New York City after we broke up, like a year after we broke up. And they were like, are you doing any shows? We'd love to come and see you.
No kidding.
They came to a show and they were so nice, so supportive. And I really lucked out in the in-law department or hypothetical in-law department. Because they've all been very, very supportive and comedy fans. So it's been very lucky.
The first time my parents came to see me, they've only seen me do it three times. Mm-hmm. And the first time I started telling jokes in my, one of the first ones was a sex joke or something like that. And my mom turned around. She's in a bar stool. She turned around and faced the bar for the next however long I was on stage.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, all right, well, can't win her. And it was awkward because I told her afterward. I'm like, well, what's the deal? And she goes, well, I just don't like stand up.
Oh, my God.
No. And here's where it gets bad. They love watching Colbert. They love everything about him. They hate Trump. They love anybody who makes fun of him. And they started watching the stand-ups there. Mm-hmm. So I was proud of Steve for getting on late night. I posted his set on my Facebook page. My mom wrote on it. She goes, oh my God, we saw that live. He's awesome. We love him. And I'm like, you son of a bitch.
I thought you didn't like stand-up.
No. They didn't like my stand-up. I got it.
Oh, God. Parents, sometimes they don't even know.
No.
But you're like, you just broke my heart.
Yeah, no. It's like, God damn it. And I thought you not buying me McDonald's that one time was horrible.
Yeah.
But now here's the real pain.
Yeah. Oh, the thing I love most.
So you're not back to normal yet, obviously, in the city. But are there good signs that it's coming back or?
Yeah, well, I think my biggest concern with this whole thing was that comedy wouldn't come back. But from this summer, based on everything I've seen, even with the Zoom shows and how packed these outdoor shows are, I think people love comedy and stand-up comedy will be back. So that I think was the most encouraging thing that happened or that I witnessed this summer was being able to do so many shows outside and then seeing how many people actually came to them. And so it's like, oh, comedy's going to be back. It's going to be back. People love, it's an institution. It's a cultural institution. And it'll be back. It just might be online sometimes or a little bit more than we're used to. But I'm fine with that. I like a good Zoom show, you know? But definitely like indoors, I've only done one show or one club spot indoors, and that was the Comedy Attic. But still, everybody was wearing masks. Everybody was being very safe. The staff there was very diligent with making sure people wear their masks, and they're wonderful. You know, I love the Comedy. I can't speak higher of the Comedy, but
I can't imagine Regan would do anything dangerously.
No. And he had just come from Chappelle. So he had just been tested. So he knew he didn't have it. And anybody that he was with also didn't have it. So we came into that situation knowing that everybody was tested negative, and we had been tested Steve got tested 2 weeks or a week before that. And he was negative. And if he's negative, then I'm negative,
right.
You know, so it was really everybody. And then we got tested right when we got back. Everybody's been very responsible. Not good, you know, so far, so
right.
Good. Yeah.
I just got this thought about that Mitch Hedberg joke, like the roundabout AIDS test.
Goes, yeah, like, exactly.
I called my buddy. He goes, do you know anybody who has AIDS? No, I guess I'm good then.
It's perfect.
I love who are your influences comedically?
Well, when I first started, Dave Attell, I could recite Skanks for the Memories.
Wow. That's such a great album.
It's so good. My favorite of all time, I would say. And then, when I was in high school, I was a huge fan of Dane Cook, but I feel like who wasn't?
Yeah.
You know, and then Chelsea Handler. I loved Chelsea. And then now, Maria Bamford is a huge influence. She's so creative in creating visuals with just words. I love her. And Dave Attell is still a huge influence. And then I feel like we all get, you know, inspired by our friends a lot too. Like just watching, especially in these outdoor shows, watching my friends navigate comedy. And I feel like you learn more from your friends than you do watching like a Netflix special. So Joe List is actually someone I've learned a lot from just listening and watching how he handles situations. So, and even Steve, you know, he has a big influence on me. He's very good at word choice. And so, yeah. And then watching Brian just recently, that was, incredible to see how he handles, you know, good crowds, bad crowds, a joke that doesn't work or, you know, like just, that. And then, Marina Franklin, I've loved her for a long time. And then I saw her. Her latest special, I think it's called Straight Black Female or Single Black Female. She, and then seeing her do outdoor shows, it's just the way she handles it in her own way. I mean, I feel like right now I'm at the point where I'm learning more from watching people live than I could ever learn from a Netflix special. I saw Dan Soder recently do a set.
He's amazing.
Son of a Gary is one of the best HBO specials, I think. I don't think it's gotten enough credit. It's incredible. And then I got to see him live during a pandemic, which I feel like, how lucky. You know what I mean? How lucky.
What other generation is going to be able to say that? I saw Dan Soder during a pandemic.
Yeah, and he was really nice. Yeah.
I get the impression that, like, Dan Soder looks like he's always happy. I mean, obviously he's not, but like, he doesn't look like he could be mean at all.
I don't think he has it in him. I mean, he was very nice to me, but I was also a comic on the show, but he was nice to everybody around him. Every interaction we've had, I'll tell you this one thing. We were at the stand and I was hosting and he was on the show. He was waiting to go up and, and we were standing there. It was really dark. And he had his hand up fiddling with something and he came back down and it accidentally brushed against, I think, my shoulder or not even like something on my body. He was like, I'm so sorry. Oh my God. I'm so, please don't end my career. I looked at him and I was like, you're good, bud. But he's very nice and so funny. Oh, he levels a room. He's so funny.
Do you feel like you belong there, like in the city? Like the people you mentioned, you're on shows with these guys all the time, it seems. Do you feel like you're one of them?
No.
Okay.
I mean, yes and no. Yes, in the fact that it's comforting to know that all these guys who've been doing it for 10 plus years have been in the same place I have been. You know, it's like we're all comics. You know, we're all on the same show together. So everybody has this almost like the same amount of respect for everybody. But that's just with comics in general. Like, I feel like comics have that way about it. We're on the show together. It's us against the audience. You know what I mean? Like, that's so in that way, sure. But in the feeling like one of them, absolutely not. Because you see someone like Dan Soder just go up and destroy with new material. And you're like, why did I even write today? You know what I mean? Like, why did I, you know? And it's just a level of experience that only time can get you. And I hope to, it's inspiring, I would say.
Yeah, I would think time and reps.
Time and reps. Of course, you got to be able to put in the work. But even like watching right before the pandemic, I got to see Dave Attell and he was doing these bits with a recorder. Like he had
Are you kidding me? Like a sixth grade recorder?
Mm-hmm. And he was doing jokes with this recorder and it was so funny. And it's like, yeah, I guess after doing comedy for 30 years, you're like, why not bring a flute on stage? You know, like I got to mix it up. You know what I mean? So, and it's just like, I don't know. This city, I feel like, has the best comics in the world. And you can see them most of the time for free. And that's the best part of being a comic in New York City is just being able to hang out in the back and watch.
I thought it was the pizza.
No, definitely not. Depends, unless it's Joe's. Joe's pizza is very good. Free Luigi is also very good. But I would take watching comedy over over pizza. Call me crazy.
I don't know. Like, I've only had the corner pizza, or Pizza Familia or something like that. What, like, one's on Times Square. But, like, yeah.
Trash. You got to go down. Joe's pizza is fantastic. I love Joe's. Big slices. Yeah, more bang for your buck. Okay?
Right.
The one in Greenwich Village is very good. And then in Brooklyn, I love Three Luigi's, but people will fight me on that. And that's fine.
That it's not good or that it's the best?
Yeah. People don't think that it's the best. And they're probably right. But I might be biased because it was around the corner from where I first moved to New York. And so I had it all the time. And so it's probably more nostalgic to me than anything. But yeah, Joe's is so good. I want Joe's right. I'm going to have Joe's tonight.
There you go. Well, Well, I'm from a town called Endicott, and that's pretty much what we do. And we get pizza, and you really can't go like a quarter of a mile without going to another pizza place. And it's, they're just all over the place. So the argument is Tony's or Nick's or Brazzetti's or Roma's, or, you know, throw a vowel at the end of the name and you got another pizza place. But it's like, that's that's what we know. That's what we do. So when I go to New York City, I'm like, all right, you know, people say, oh, it's the best. I'm like, I don't know. Endicott's pretty good. Then I hear Connecticut's a state. And I'm like, oh, okay, fine.
Yeah, Connecticut has some good pizza places. But yeah, no, you can't be New York. I mean, come on.
Do you see yourself staying in New York for the rest of time?
I can see it. Yeah, I love it. I could imagine myself getting really old and wanting to be in the middle of the country. Like upstate New York is beautiful. I could see that, getting a little cabin in the woods somewhere and just dying there. But New York City, I think, is my home for a while. People always ask, would you ever do LA? Sure. If I had to, if I had a job, if I was lucky enough, to have a job, but, nah, New York is, but I also, I'm a person who likes to stay in her ways. I don't like change. I like New York. It works. I stay.
Well, I mean, I'd like to say, oh, you know, what are your goals or whatever, but like everything's on lockdown basically. I mean, are you kind of at peace with that? Like whatever, like we're all paused together.
I think we're all paused together. And if anything, it's made me start this podcast, Good Time Gal.
Right.
And I'm very grateful to get that moving, and it's going pretty good, knock on wood. And, I also, writing, you know, it's time to, you know, write that thing you always put off. And, I feel very lucky that I'm able to perform as much as I do, especially given the pandemic. So right now I'm working on being grateful instead of dwelling on what could have been. You know, but there, if you had asked me 2 months ago, it probably would have been a very angry response. Yeah, it's out of our control. So all you can do is focus on what you enjoy and try and make yourself happy and be productive in that way. So that's what I'm trying to do right now.
So you like doing the podcast?
I love it. I love Good Time Gal. Oh my God. And I love Beasts too. I've been doing that for a long time. But Good Time Gal was a real passion project that
was it like one of the first ones? The audio quality wasn't great, but you said that, I've been sitting on this for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you been really working on this for a couple of years?
Yeah. Half of the audio, I think 4 of the audios that I had were from 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I had them. I'd been collecting these interviews. And some of them I even lost because my computer had a glitch and I lost some of them. But I had been working on it for a while. I got so intimidated by the actual putting up of the podcast that it always seemed so time consuming, and I didn't have the time to do it, to dedicate to it, I thought. And then I did it in one day. And I was like, Jesus Christ, Caitlin. Yeah, that's always how it works. It's like, fuck, I could have just, you know. But I really do enjoy it. I have so much fun doing it.
Well, every conversation I've heard from you, you know, like Tom Takkar, like anybody, Matt Broussard. No, was he on Beast?
He was on Beast, yeah. Okay. But he'll probably be on Good Time Gal soon enough. But like, we have a good time talking to each other.
Yeah, but like everything seems so natural. Like you've been working with these guys for 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. That means a lot, because sometimes I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to talk to this person and hopefully we get to the topic, you know? Yeah. But that was interesting, because I think Tom Takkar, he was probably the person, like, I know him and we've hung out a few times, but we're not like close. And so in my head, I was like, oh, I wonder if I'm going to be able to do a good job interviewing him. I don't know. But it actually turned out to be a really fun episode. And he's also so nice and so funny. So it was fun. I got to learn more about Tom. Wonderful, you know?
Yeah. What I like about doing the podcast is, like, with anybody, it's like, you always think, oh, how am I going to get an hour plus out of this? Like, I'm never going to learn, never going to have that much to talk about. It's like, yeah, you do. Like, it's going to happen. Like, it's just like talking to a regular person.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also about trusting your instinct to go down certain avenues and stuff, which I have had the struggled with, which is just trusting yourself and your immediate thought. And now it's like, oh, it's just a conversation, like you said.
That pause was intentional.
Oh, good. No. I was like, oh, I fucked it up.
No.
Oh, no, I like, ruined everything.
Let's go awkward silence. Let's see if that works. But
yeah.
Well, I appreciate everything. You know, do you want to plug anything?
Yeah, Good Time Gal would be the thing to plug. Shows are ever changing.
Right.
Because who knows what's going to get canceled, what's going to get pushed up, you know. So I would just say Good Time Gal and Beasts. And then my Instagram at Caitlin Palufo. That's where I post all of my shows. And then my website, of course, which is just CaitlinPalufo.com. I'm very straight across the board at Caitlin Palufo. You Google it, Caitlin with a C, you'll find me. All right.
You know, if I could do it over again, my Instagram handle is I Had Sex with Mike Peters because, yeah, because I figured somebody has to say it. But yeah. It's like an old college story. And then I was I had it set up because it'll be funny. Sure. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, that's the outlier to everything. And I'm like,
I really like that someone has to type it in. I had sex with Mike Peters in order to find you. That's very fun.
Yeah. Used to be on a t-shirt. So
good for you.
Again, first show I ever did, a friend of mine brought, it's an old college story. What happened was a friend of mine, after a drunken night, she wrote it on my future girlfriend's whiteboard. And my ex-girlfriend lived in the same dorm. And she came down and saw it. I had sex with Mike Peters. We were broken up for a few days. And so it got around to sorority and people were yelling, I had sex with Mike Peters. So they put on a t-shirt. My friend made a t-shirt for me. And then she came to my first stand-up show. And the bartender wore it and served my parents while wearing I had sex with Mike Peters.
Oh my God. So you just traumatized your parents.
Basically. You know what? I didn't think about that part. That's probably why they waited another 3 years.
Yeah. They were like, I'm going to take it easy. Apparently everybody's fucking my son. Oh my God. Yeah.
Well, looks like I don't need my therapist appointment on Friday. Yeah. So thank you being here. Yeah, I know. I'll send you the check in the mail. We'll be good.
Just a copay, $35. Thank you.
Well, again, thank you so much for doing this. I had a blast.
Oh, good. Me too. This was very fun. Thank you for having me.
You got it. All right, I'll talk to you in a bit.
Yeah, talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Stacked, peeling back my sunburned skin. I'll wait outside your bedroom. I hope they let me in.